Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and maybe not quite as happy of a hump night tonight as most. I want to welcome you all to the show tonight. I'm feeling a little shell-shocked, and I imagine my co-host is Karen Robinson. Not sure if she can hear us out there or if she'll be calling in, but she texted me a few hours ago and said that she was at the emergency room. She was having severe headache, nausea, and chest pain. And she had been sitting in the emergency room since 5 o'clock her time. So that was, she was going on four and a half hours, I guess, that she had just been sitting in the emergency room. And I've been hearing that more and more from people. I have a friend in Houston who recently went to the emergency room, and a lot of triaging going on. She was actually having a heart attack, and she spent hours and hours in the waiting room. And I understand from a couple of friends here in Middle America that that's what's going on here as well. And Karen is in Michigan, so it seems that the emergency room is not the place you want to be these days for an emergency. Scary thought. Not sure what all of that's about. Could be the new variant making beds unavailable to take people upstairs, but not sure about the emergency room aspect. So, from my end of things, last Monday night, the 30th, was my dad's birthday. Happy birthday to my dad, who caught up with my mom, whose birthday was August 13th, and they just celebrated a couple days ago, September 4th, their 63rd wedding anniversary. And then the next day, Monday, I guess it was August 31st, I went to have a biopsy. I had my annual physical a few weeks before that, and I went to have a biopsy that was in a very tender area. And promptly, not too long later, I was at my desk chair, still shaken and in shock because I didn't know that that was going to be happening, that a biopsy was going to be happening. I thought, get a little cream, do my regular skin check since I hadn't been in, and I thought that would be the end of it, and it wasn't. So, being a little shaken when I got home, I sat at my desk, and on my desk chair, I had had a habit of sitting on my foot, you know, like kind of Indian style, but with one leg, pulling one up and sitting on it. Well, it fell asleep, and I took a couple tentative steps, knowing my foot was asleep, and I thought it had woken up, and I took a large stride, and I was wrong. I fell down really hard with my butt on the side, with my foot going to the side. My butt landed on my foot. And I had had a full cup of coffee, and I had just made it to the threshold of the hallway when that happened. And the coffee cup went flying out of my hand, and the coffee splattered onto the walls and the runner, and my cup broke down the hallway a bit. And I'm half laying, half sitting on the floor, and my husband got up and ran from his desk in the room I had just been in, our office, and said, "What happened?" As he took in the Friday the 13th look of coffee splattered all over everything, and then asked me if I was all right. And I said, "I think so." And he put out his arm, and I hopped up, and I said, "Oh, I hurt my ankle." And so I knew that a sprained ankle hurt a lot, and I walked on it the rest of that Tuesday, Wednesday, and then on Thursday, my foot was swollen the size of a football, and it really, really, really hurt. So it was getting worse, not better. I went to my doctor's office and saw the PA, got some x-rays, and found out I broke my foot in three places. The bone that holds your little piggy on is broken in two spots. The only reason I am in a boot, not having surgery, is because the bone was still together. It was just, it's just broken in two places. And then a chip out of my ankle. And so, as she said, I did it up really good. So across the hall, they have an ortho office. Of course, it was late in the day by then, and there wasn't going to be a doctor that was going to see me. But fortunately for me, since I could hardly walk at all at this point, they had an emergency clinic in the ortho office. And so I saw one of their PAs, and they were able to pull up the x-rays and gave me this lovely boot that I've had on, not even a week yet. Tomorrow will be a week that I've been hobbling around with crutches and this boot. And I got to tell you, I had crutches once before in my life when I was 17, the summer between high school and college. I broke my femur bone. That was nasty, on the same right leg. But then I was young and stronger, and I had surgery for that. That bone did not stay together. It needed to be pinned. And so anyway, I used the crutches for about a year, and I whipped around like there was no tomorrow. Now, all these decades later, they put this boot on that makes it feel like my leg weighs 100 pounds. And the crutches have gotten much cheaper. When she brought in these metal crutches, I said, "Huh, I had some before that were wooden. Don't you have those?" And she said, "Oh, no, those are antique. They've been gone for decades." And she hands me these metal crutches. And I got to tell you, the padding is non-existent where you hold them and in the armpit. And my upper body strength is long gone for dragging my body around with this heavy leg and these crutches, these sticks I've been using for almost a week. And then I had a little shock. I found out that biopsy that I had came back not so good, and I'll have to be having a pretty nasty procedure at the end of the month. And in the meantime, my doctor called and said another test I had had came out questionable from that physical a month ago. And so I'm going to have to see another doctor and get a rather unpleasant to find out what, if anything, is going on there. And so, boy, from Monday being like any other day to the three things that have unfolded this week, and I've got doctor's appointments next week, the next week, and the next week. So that's how I'll be spending September. I'm sure I'll be back next week, but then I may need a couple weeks off. In any case, I'm shell-shocked. I told you a little bit about Karen, and it looks like she might have found a place. They might have found her a bed or done something for her, so I'm going to bring her on in 1 minute. I talked about you, Karen, right when I first came on, just to say tonight is going to run a little bit differently than what we had planned. That handle of mine in a flash. Yeah, that's how quickly your life can change, in a flash. And that's what I'm feeling like this week. So what we were here for tonight, and I'm gonna bring Karen on in just a second in case she gets interrupted by staff. I don't think she's in the waiting room for her 15th hour, but of the emergency room. But we're here tonight in remembrance of 9/11. It's the 20th anniversary of September 11th when, well, it was a day that changed our country. Before I go on with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring Karen on since I really don't know. She was able to send me a quick text to let me know she was in the emergency room and about those symptoms I told you, headache, nausea, and some chest pain, but I'm going to bring her on while I can. And if any of you want to call and talk about your recollections directly or indirectly of 9/11, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And if not, then Karen and I will talk as long as we're able. And then I do have a show from a couple of years ago with James T. Ryder talking about the ongoing costs of 9/11. That is still very true today and will be for quite some time with all the debris. You all remember seeing the debris everywhere, the smoke, the toxins in the air, and all these first responders and others who lived in the area breathed that in, and it's been killing them. And so it wasn't just 3,000 people that got killed on 9/11, but 9/11 has been killing people ever since, whether it's because of the war or the ongoing costs from all the toxins and injuries that were suffered that day. With that, I'm going to bring on Karen and see how she's doing. I'm sitting here with my leg propped up on the step. How are you doing, Karen? Did you land?
Yeah, I did land in a room finally after 2.5 hours, a little bit over that, in the waiting room. Then they parked me in a bed in the hall, and now I'm in a room. So I'm grateful for that. I'm glad to be here on the fly with you tonight. And, yeah, I just had the last couple of days really sincerely uncomfortable bout of chest pain and then an excruciating headache, which I haven't had a headache that rough in quite some time. And so they have ordered some follow-up tests. You know, they want to rule out the obvious things, COVID and any possible blood clots, things like that. So I've got some other tests pending, so I may have to boot, scoot, and boogie here if they come back in. But I definitely wanted to...
Gotcha.
I wanted to be able to say hello, and I wanted to be able to touch base with the listening audience. In fact, here they are.
Okay, well, you come back. Are you able to mute yourself and come back if it's a quick stop? I'm going to go ahead and leave Karen unmuted. I think she's still on the switchboard, but not responding, so she probably muted herself. Gosh, so thoughts and prayers, hopefully up for both of us and those suffering the ongoing costs of 9/11. I think we all remember where we were that day. For me, I was getting ready for work. God, 20 years ago. Haven't worked in so long. I was getting ready for work in the morning, and I was putting on my makeup, and I got a phone call from a friend of mine. She said, turn on the TV quick, and she was hysterical and crying, and I turned on the TV just in time to see the second plane, the South Tower. And I was in shock. I plopped down and into a chair, and I was trying to begin all of what was happening. And like a lot of you, I was back. I was seeing images of the North Tower, which was hit first. And at that time, I remember them reporting that a small aircraft, they thought a small aircraft, had accidentally flown into the tower. And you could hear the news people guessing, second-guessing what was going on. And then when that second plane hit, there was a lot of confusion. But I don't think that there was much doubt that we were under attack. And then before long, the plane crashed because of the heroics of passengers in Pennsylvania, and then the Pentagon was hit by another of these planes. And I sat there in that chair holding my mascara in one hand, the top of it, and the bottom was in my other hand, and I didn't leave that chair or the TV. God, I bet for almost 24 hours, I was just in shock, glued to the television. My parents, who live here, happened to be visiting Vegas at the time, I believe, and suddenly the planes were all grounded. They heard. I actually called them. It was earlier down there, and they sleep in on vacation. And I woke them up, and I did the same thing. I said, turn on the TV. We're being attacked. And my parents wanted to get a plane and get home right away. Well, all the planes were grounded. They tried to get they had a rental car, I guess, excuse me. They were calling about keeping the rental car and taking it across the country. The rental car company did not want them to do that, but they did it anyway. So they were calling and checking in with me, and I was telling them what was happening, because of course everyone there at the ground zeros and everyone watching wasn't sure what else might be coming. And we were all in shock. And there was a lot of fear, confusion, shell shock going on. I watched an interesting show. Every year there's two things that I do. And one of them is, there were about 10 people who hailed from my city, the city I live in, who were killed that day from here, living there and working. And one of the sisters, we have a memorial park, beautiful park, that commemorates each of the wars and names of people who fought in each of the wars, and a lovely rose garden and a huge, huge green space. And ever since a couple of years after 9/11, Lynn, whose brother passed in the North Tower, has had civic groups helping. She and friends did it the first year, and after that, civic groups started joining in and putting down 3,000 flags in the ground with tags on each one, different color for where the people were when they perished, what their name is, how old they were, their family status, where they were. And every year I go there. This year, because I'm on sticks and a boot, I, at best, could just make it pretty far away because I can't walk down the million stairs onto the grassy knoll and all the way. I can't do that. I'm lucky that I've been home all week and I can hobble from the living room to the bathroom to the bedroom to the office, and that's about all for me for a week. Maybe this weekend we'll be able to drive by, but I need to make up for the walking I did the first couple of days so that I don't have to end up having surgery on my foot too. In any case, that's always such a moving tribute and remembrance to 9/11 here in our city. And I know that they're going to be having a tribute on 9/11 in New York, as they always do. And every year around this time, there are a lot of shows on. And you would think after 20 years that the shows couldn't be any different. They were shows of the same event, right? So the people who were survivors telling about what happened and the first responders describing, some of the same shows are on every year. But they've made some new ones. And the other night I caught one, and it was called it was Calls from 9/11, Lost Calls from 9/11 or September 11th. And the weirdest thing is that a man from Texas went to a flea market and saw a piece of equipment that looked like a big old, kind of like VHS machines looked long ago. There wasn't a slot, but it was a big square piece of equipment, radio type equipment. And he didn't know what it was, but he bought it. He was curious about it, and he bought it. And he came home, and it was broken at first, and he was able to tinker with it and fix it. And what had happened is that Oppenheimer, they sold mutual funds, stocks at the time, taken over, but back then they were Oppenheimer. They were across the street from the towers. And when you're making trades, it's always recorded. The line is always recorded. You're required. The companies are required to record those calls, lest there be any mistake. And what happened was, what this man started, listening to were the first couple seconds were people calling in to make trades. And then all of the sudden, it was just people calling to see if their loved one who worked in that office was okay. We got to hear a couple of those conversations. People that were just panicking and knew that building was across the street, calling to warn them in case they didn't know, calling to ask them if everybody was okay in that building, what they were seeing. What an amazing thing, almost 20 years later, that the man finds this radio in Texas, of all places, that on 9/11 had been in the Oppenheimer office, that had these recordings never before captured. It was very interesting. And you could hear the fear and the panic and the terror as people were calling. And let's see, on Nat Geo, they have, I believe it's a 6-part deal that's new this year. And it starts out, I watched part one the other night, The First Responders, and very sad, there's a captain in the fire department, and they had been working on, a group of them had been working on a gas leak by a sewer just down the block from the Twin Towers. You could see it in the background and see these guys working. And then all of a sudden, the first plane hit, got their attention. And they turned around and started running toward it, toward the danger, to try to do what they do to help people. One of them was his brother, the captain's brother, little brother, had also joined the fire and rescue, was a fireman. So they were both, the whole group, running down to help. And the horror that they saw outside on the sidewalk, I hadn't heard that talked about before. We've heard some horrible, horrible things that happened on 9/11. But in this case, I had never heard these first responders were the first ones to make it to the sidewalk to enter the building. And some of the things they saw on the sidewalk, I can't even imagine what it must have been like for them to walk across this huge sidewalk and see some of the things they saw, and then go in. Another thing I didn't realize, or maybe had forgotten that the jet fuel went down the elevator chutes. And so there were people burnt to death or running who were burning, who had been by the elevators. So these firemen knew that they were going to have to take their 60 pounds of gear and go up the stairs. Wow. In all that chaos, how brave and heroic they were. The captain is telling the story in this case, and he talks about different people come on that were rescued by these firemen. They had been trapped. Their door wouldn't open to get out of their office, to get in the hallway, try to get down the stairwell. So several people were on that would have otherwise perished if these firemen hadn't been so brave, the fire and rescue hadn't been so brave and gone up and showed them the way to the stairwell and told them to run like hell. Another fireman who wrote a book and Unintended Hero, I think is the name of it. Although I would have to double check that. He was going fishing. He had the day off that day and was hunting or fishing or going somewhere with his brothers. And he heard, saw what was going on, and he tried to get through the Holland Tunnel. He just called and told his brothers no, he was going in. Wasn't gonna go with them. And the Holland Tunnel had been closed. And so this man ran from where he was through the traffic, got out of his car through the traffic, through the tunnel, picked up 60 pounds worth of gear and went to work. Now the captain's brother was one who made it up I think it was the 80 something floor, and they showed a woman who said it was so smoky and they were convinced that they weren't going to make it, and all of a sudden they couldn't get the door of their office open, and debris was all over, falling all over, and the smoke was so bad they couldn't breathe, and suddenly they heard pounding on their door, and the door opened, and two firemen were there and got them out, grabbed the lady's arm, and the rest of the people that were in her office, showed them to the stairwell, and they made it down. They made it out to tell about it. But the woman looked back at the fireman who had just given her a hand out the door, and they were going up as they encouraged everybody to go down quickly and get out and away. He was going up. Their eyes met, and he didn't come back. The man whose day off, and by the way, that was the captain's brother. The captain's little brother didn't make it out that day. And then the man who was running around the tunnel, I'm sorry, now I'm getting him a little confused. I do apologize. everyone these health issues that have just been a real gut punch in the last 6 days have really made me distracted. One of the men who worked in the building and a man who worked in the office across from him were running down the stairs to make their escape, and they came upon a few women huddled together in a stairwell. One was in a wheelchair, and the others weren't going to leave her. The other couple women weren't going to leave the lady in the wheelchair there. They were staying with her. And the men said, "Can we help you with anything?" just automatically. Well, yeah. What they could help with is carrying this woman in her wheelchair down 65 flights of steps. And they did it. And they all survived. Incredible acts of heroism and unity. So different 20 years later on this anniversary of 9/11 with all the divisiveness and everything being politicized and people forgetting about patriotism and respect and how we were united, as I'm sure Pearl Harbor and a lot of other events, as well as the day-to-day, we were called the United States for a reason. The people that came here were a melting pot of people who were united. And today, you turn on the news and you hear a lot of criticism about this country. One thing that happened for this 20th anniversary, well, we'll go back 20 years. When people found out we had been attacked, they freely, of their own free will, enlisted in the military, and they went to fight. They weren't going to let that stand. And for 20 years, they've been fighting. They did catch Osama bin Laden eventually and got rid of a bad guy in Hussein and Saddam in Iraq. And they've been fighting for 20 years. We've got those injuries and casualties directly related to 9/11. And here, 20 years later, my opinion, I think we all, most of us, thought that this conflict had gone on long enough. 20 years was the longest war, and to be honest, those countries are much older than we are and have a much different cultural makeup than we do. And not everybody wants what we've got. Our soldiers have done such a great job. They have done an exemplary job. People kept joining. People kept helping. It's just the truth of the matter is the mission. We have a show I encourage you to listen to if you like military history. We've got a 3-time Purple Heart recipient from this conflict and recently named the head of the Gold Star Families Group and a military historian. James McCormick and Rich Kilblaine on a show called Continue Mission on every Friday night. I encourage you to listen to them, and I want to thank them and all of the military and the first responders and the common heroes of that day who did the right thing. They weren't thinking of themselves. They were thinking of our country, our people. It was worth saving. It was worth dying for. That's how they felt. That's how they felt about helping their brothers and sisters and not apologizing for being from America, not apologizing, no matter what color they were, for their skin color or their gender. I'd like to see me, too, skip over to Afghanistan right now, see what they can do about the women's situation over there, and understand that nothing is perfect. No individual person is perfect. So, of course, no group, no country is perfect. But there's a hell of a lot worse out there. And I'm proud to be an American, and I stand. And I'm sad, again, recognizing the 20th anniversary of 9/11, but also the more recent end of the war, which you'd think people would be celebrating the end of this 20-year conflict on the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. And I know that that's the way it was poised as a blue ribbon for a job well done, being the president whose watch this war ended on. Unfortunately, everything went haywire. I don't understand it. I do understand that 12 Marines and a naval officer were killed. That was more soldier deaths in about 5 years to happen in one day. Orchestrated by the administration when he left them sitting ducks at the airport. And all the people who have been left behind. We've heard reports 100, 200, 300, there was a 500 the other day of Americans left behind in Afghanistan when we made a hasty withdrawal, which wasn't the plan. Yes, President Trump had spoken to the Taliban, and he was bringing people out slowly. But there's many clips over the media where he's saying a rapid withdrawal would be a huge mistake. And he listened to his advisors. And so this one is with the man who says the buck stops here. I believe that. I'm not exactly sure why we weren't evacuating people first before we withdrew our troops, packed our bags, left the country, and called it the end of the war. Maybe there wasn't enough time to get that in under the deadline. To have it be a heroic gesture. Instead, we did it bass-ackwards, near as I can tell, by leaving everyone I don't think anyone expected that the country would get overtaken in 10 minutes by the Taliban, that there wasn't going to be time, that that quickly the country would get taken over. And we had our soldiers on a civilian airfield and wouldn't let them leave. And so as Americans and sympathizers, people who have helped us, Afghan citizens who have helped us for 20 years as interpreters and with other jobs in support of our soldiers and the United States, we left them behind. I remember hearing a lady on a liberal news station. This is kind of unforgivable because now every news media, no matter what, and maybe this will bring us back together and unite us again 20 years later, this horror show will maybe bring us back to the unity and the caring and compassion that we demonstrated 20 years ago when it was about we, not me. And nobody was looking at any of the issues that we've been talking about the last couple of years. They were looking at surviving, and they were looking at grieving, and they were looking at retaliation. And now, something I've never seen before, and I'm pretty long in the tooth, been through a couple conflicts, our soldiers are not going to ever go through what the Vietnam soldiers did. They're being welcomed back as the heroes they are, as the Vietnam heroes were. Hell, they were drafted. They didn't have a choice. The ones in this conflict stepped up, signed up, and went of their own accord for 20 years. Some deployed 4, 5, 7, 9 times. I mentioned those first responders that walked up on the steps, the sidewalk of the Twin Towers that day, and the horror they saw that was something no one should ever see. That's got to be so damaging to the psyche. And then to see more and more and more, to see that initial horror walk into the building and still be brave enough to do their job and keep seeing some of the worst unimaginable things that I don't think the psyche is meant to see without cracking. PTSD, anxiety disorders. There'd probably be something wrong if you didn't seeing those kind of things. The same for our soldiers who've been fighting for 20 years and deploying time after time after time after time, have seen some horrible things. But true to their mission statement, and most people will say, as far as the mission statement goes, that really that mission was over by about the end of 2002, 2003. Then a number of presidents changed the agenda and you know, we started imposing some of our will onto a country that wasn't so interested in that. Humanitarian issues, a lot of other issues, and off the original mission and into a lot more missions out 20 years. And now, true to their oaths that they took when they joined the military, the people now, and if you look up Digital Dunkirk, you'll find information, excuse me, folks, trying to shift my leg a little, information about our veterans and soldiers that just cannot and will not accept the Americans and the Allies left behind. They're not getting help from the State Department. In fact, the State Department gave some people in Afghanistan, some Americans who managed to get a hold of them, a website, which is interesting. Kabul, somebody could feasibly get a website. But a lot of people that live there live out in the country, different provinces, and they're, you know, there's not Wi-Fi at every Starbucks like down the block like there is here. There is no internet. So telling you to get your passport and fill in your application to get out of the country on the computer is a little hinky depending on where they were. But as it turns out, if you could log on, the site crashed. So a few people did get through. They made it to the airport without getting killed, but they couldn't get in. What happened was, and you guys all saw it, was the mobs, the absolute mobs of people around the gate. And our soldiers were not allowed to have a perimeter. I hear they were offered the whole city, which would be nice if we would have taken them up on that. But there was no perimeter, and our guys had to stay on the airfield. And so when this massive amount of people wanting to escape were congregating around the gate, there were just too many. There were too many people, and the government didn't know who they all were. There was no way to vet the people that were out there effectively, even though there were people yelling that they had the right visa. The soldiers were told to close the airport. Nobody else could come in. So there were helpless people that had traveled a long way by foot. It's a landlocked country. With the right paperwork, who were not able to get in to catch one of those planes. And we all saw what happened with that mob before they did it. The mob rushed the airport, rushed the gate, try to get onto the plane. And all kinds of people made it onto the plane. Later, one of the administration themselves said on tape on the news that the majority of the people who made it on the plane that were Afghanistan were not the interpreters and the allies that helped us. They were people who weren't vetted. So again, personal opinion, but I'm a little worried coming into this 9/11 between what's been going on at the border being wide open And now with the flights from Afghanistan, we've opened the welcome mat for terrorists. And we've shown our flank to the enemy. And these soldiers, going back to these groups, independent groups of soldiers around the country, are working 24/7 because they know it's a short window. The Taliban is knocking on doors. Our own government gave them a list of people to let through the checkpoints, a list of the Americans and the allies to let through the checkpoints. But guess what? They're terrorists. They are terrorists. We gave them the names of the people to look for and kill when our military left. Which they didn't want to do. So a lot of our military and veterans are still working, as I said, to do what they made their oath on, and that's leave no man behind. And yes, that's man or woman behind. And when the military uses that slogan, they don't just mean the military, their own troop. Leave no man behind. They mean American and anyone that helps us, that's not who we are as a country. And they're showing the best of what this country has to offer. No thanks to the administration right now. They are getting people out, which is a really, really hard thing to do. No planes can land, as I said, and you know, they're landlocked, so no boats can come. They have people on the ground, and there's different roads that one day a road will be open, the next day it will be blocked. And so they it's fluid all the time. They've got people that they're keeping in safe houses, trying to work them out of the country to Qatar or one of the willing to help countries, which are hard to come by in that neck of the woods. And they are working their asses off. I've been hearing them on every network. All kinds of different ones involved in this digital Dunkirk and not wanting to leave anyone behind. And they know, because the names were provided, that the Taliban are terrorists. They just got done living there off and on for 20 years while they were serving. They know these people aren't diplomatic, aren't to be trusted. We were just fighting with them for 20 years. So suddenly they're going to change. Heck, you saw them with $90 billion worth of our equipment, having a parade the day the plane left, shooting our weapons up in the air in our tanks, going to be flying our planes, shooting our guns. And unfortunately, one advantage our troops had in the Middle East is they didn't have to fight at night a lot because they didn't have any night vision equipment. But we did. So we could get a lot done at night there with the edge we had of night vision equipment. Yep, we left a bunch of that there too. So the Taliban, not sure if we're recognizing them. I think we are. Recognizing them, really, as a legitimate country run by terrorists that is so well armed with our stuff, $90 million of your stuff. God, we've been going through COVID for almost 2 years, and a lot of people have been out of jobs. Small business has been decimated. Geez, $90 billion. I think the least we could have done is destroy that equipment before we left. Even if it couldn't be all of it, isn't destroying it, if we couldn't get it out of there, and I don't understand logistics, it sounds easy to me that you get rid of the people and the equipment first before you pull the military out, but we didn't do it that way. For whatever reason, we didn't do it that way. We left more arms than most countries have. We left our secrets, our edge, our equipment there, and armed terrorists who are going to kill the Americans our government left behind, and all the Afghanis who helped and supported. Our soldiers. And so my thoughts and prayers go out to those left behind and who must be feeling a huge amount of betrayal. And my thoughts and prayers go out to those brave fighters who are still fighting for the people of our country and who helped our country, regardless of what the administration does, because they know it's the right thing to do. They know that's what we in the United States of America honor, true to our word, no one left behind. And they're doing for us as the window's closing and are brokenhearted that this has come down the way it does. Again, nobody, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's some people deployed a whole lot of times that were willing to keep going and going, but we were not going to change things in that country. Although, you know, my husband was in the beginning part of the conflict 20 years ago before I met him. And he served in Korea. You know, the Korean War was a long time ago. But we left some ground forces still there in Korea, just to keep an eye on things, to have a presence so that if anything came up, we've got a post, we've got a presence. We don't have that anymore in that neck of the woods in the Middle East and Afghanistan. We don't have that anymore. So we don't have the intel anymore. And we put out the welcome mat. So my prayer this 20-year anniversary of 9/11 is for all the families who lost someone on 9/11 and who continue to lose people for the last 20 years, they've continued to lose people from their family, from their military service. My heart goes out to you. My prayers go out to you. I can't even express just that we all still remember. And again, I'm hoping that in spite of any politics or anything that's on the news, I'm hoping as people watch or go to a commemorative event for 9/11 in your area, or if you feel more comfortable, watching it on TV, and remember where we were then, immediately after. Now, no commentary on the Bush administration. All I want to say are two things about that couple days, just that couple days. I'll go back to I was sitting on the chair with the mascara glued to the TV, not believing what I was seeing, and in shock, frozen in my seat. I didn't make it to work that day. Life stopped as I knew it and was going to be redefined, like with a lot of people. And so watching these programs, I'm hoping, like I said, 20 years later, if we can get past leaders and be a leader ourselves. The United States is made up of a bunch of individuals. And we were together then. We were about the United States of America and what had just happened to our country. And there's an awful lot of people out there that thought our country was worth laying down their lives, and that our people were worth laying down their lives for. Some of that seems to be missing a little bit now, 20 years later, and I'm hoping that people, as they go back and reflect, pray for those survivors of 9/11 and the families of those that didn't survive, and all of those who are continuing to get sick and die to this day because of what happened on 9/11 and injuries they sustained. We'll probably never know how many brain injuries there were, but I'll bet you there was a lot. But people are dying of what they breathed in, all of the toxins, that burnt fuel, the burnt plastic. So many things had chemicals in them that were in that air. It was interesting. In one photo, a quick photo I saw, a lady wearing a mask in the middle of all the ashes and filthy air filled with that billowing smoke. And she had on a mask. It was an N95 mask. Wow. 20 years later, man, we'd kill to find an N95 mask. And we're fighting about them. Should we wear them? Shouldn't we wear them? I think I saw Karen wearing a mask there at the hospital. And in the hospital and going to the doctor's offices, where I've been a lot lately, and the hospital Karen is in right now, and our thoughts and prayers are with her. Don't like to hear those symptoms. But in any case, people are wearing masks, mandatory, in the doctor's offices. Here I was so COVID phobic for all of this time. What, year and a half? God, 2020, 21, year and a half. Seems like forever. Another game-changing event. I wanted to go back to Bush for a second. There were two things. No matter how you felt about his presidency, I don't feel I can really comment on that one way or another. The two things that made me feel better that I think are good leadership qualities, whether you like the whole ball of wax that came with it or not, there were two things that made me feel a little better because I was scared. And when I was sitting there in that chair that day, later in the afternoon, I got really scared because when the president took off in Air Force One and was flying from base to base, the news people were telling where he was flying. And oh my God, he landed at our Air Force base in the afternoon. And they announced it on every channel. And you think I wasn't scared before? I thought, geez, do you have to tell where he's going? We don't even know what's going on. You know, we don't know if there's going to be more of these attacks. And you're telling him exactly where the president is. And he's just not very far from my house right now. A friend of mine, Tom, who's passed away, has a photo of Air Force One on the tarmac. My husband, who I didn't know then, was working on base, and they were locked in. You couldn't leave on 9/11. They locked the base. So he was there when the president came and went down under. Quick stop, and then he left. But that really scared me. Really? Do you have to tell on the news every place the president is stopping? Part of what he's in the air for is to not be a target. And that was frightening. But when he stood on top of the rubble, and he said, I hear you. Pretty soon they'll all hear you. He didn't seem afraid. You know, one thing about him, whether you liked his presidency or not, is he was a pretty good old boy from Texas. He was genuine. He was genuine that day, but the one that really got me was Yankee Stadium, I guess. Is that where it was, where he threw the first pitch? Quaking in the boots, not knowing what was going to happen in our country. And I never saw ball field seems so big And it was filled with people. So even if he had a security detail, for God's sake, or they were scattered about in the stands, I mean, there was a zillion people at that game. And there was no one with him when he took the long walk from the dugout out to the plate. And he pitched that ball, and he had that smile on his face. And to me, it symbolized I was scared. I didn't want him to do it. God, there could have been a sniper, anything. Anything could have happened. They could have flown a plane into the stadium. Who knows? Who knew what was going to happen back then? But it made my heart race and then stop for a minute. Those two incidences, mostly at the baseball game, that knowing the country was upside down, we didn't know what was going on, if more was coming, we had all these losses, all this horror. And he was able to ground me for a minute by walking out there and pitching that first ball and not getting killed. Being so genuine about it. After that, I don't know. Everybody's got their opinions, but and we'll know, it'll be interesting to see all the presidents since then, including Bush, Obama, Clinton, Trump, Biden, has made a promise. I'll be interested to see if he can keep. And that's that the survivors of 9/11 would like to have documents declassified, unredacted, tell what happened. And they suspect that, well, I really can't speak for them. They feel like they don't know the truth about what happened, and they want to know. They've wanted to know. They've been asking, but it's been 20 years. And for the 21st anniversary, they told the president they didn't want him coming to New York for the memorial unless he brought with him declassified documents, unredacted, that tell the true tale of what happened, 9/11, the truth. And Biden said to do that. He's got his tickets to go. I'll be very interested to see if he can do that. Intentions aside, one way or another, I can't remember the rule, but those classified documents are something like 60 or 80 years. There's a rule somewhere that they can't be declassified by the president because he decides so. It has to be this 80 years, 60 years, whatever it is. I'd have to look it up. But there is a rule on it. So I don't know how it would be possible for him to fulfill this promise. I hope he does. He can't afford to keep making promises. He can't keep. And then what? It doesn't bring anyone back. I think most of us know that the terrorist who flew those planes and their kingpin came from an allied country. And recently a document was found in a, somewhere in that country that gave instructions of how to fly a plane into a building. And so I'm not sure truth will do. It will let the survivors and their families know the truth of what happened. It won't change what happened. That's done. The truth would give them the closure they've been looking for. And I hope that they aren't as disappointed on 9/11. As all the Americans that are left behind fearing for their life, and they don't know for sure how many Americans are there because you didn't have to check in with the embassy when you went there. A lot of people did. So nobody can really say what number of Americans they are. I actually heard someone speaking from the administration the other day that said only 200. Wow. 200 people and their families, and then read an article that said 500. So they don't know for sure how many Americans are there. The ones they did know about, the Taliban knows about too. And the sympathizers, the ones that helped us, they know who they are too. And every day that passes since the soldiers have left, those people, well, let's just say if I'm skeptical about the Taliban sending anyone back because they had a gentleman's agreement, how can you have a gentleman's agreement without a gentleman present? They're terrorists. Ask any soldier. Very tough situation, and it'll be interesting to see how things unfold. But I'm separating the government from we, the people. We, the people, really need to get our stuff together. As far as unity goes, we need to go back to a time where we were not indoctrinated. We were not told what to think. We all thought what we wanted. We shared our opinions with other people. And if we didn't agree, we had spirited dialogue. And then we agreed to disagree. And we went and had coffee and we were still friends. That's not what it's been like the last couple of years. We've had a lot of stressors, though. We've had problems with reintegration and suicide of these soldiers who've been fighting for 20 years. There's going to be a lot more of that. I would tell you on this 9/11, if you're in one of the Ground Zero zones, or you know survivors in your area who lost people, that you want to drop them a card, give them a call, say something on Facebook. I know we still have a pandemic going, so you're probably not going to go up and give them a big hug, but let them know that we remember and that our hearts are still with them. these 20 years later, that we had a collective sense of grief for harm to a country we were proud of. We didn't all agree. For anybody around in the 60s, you know, we all didn't agree. And we've had our share of internal strife, because you put a melting pot of people from different cultures, you know, that's a difference between us and the other countries. They have like people in their country. They have something called borders that defines their country as a country separate from other countries. And those who have opened their borders don't resemble the country they were before in the slightest, and are full of terrorism, terrorist acts over in Europe. But we were together with a mission back then. We supported the survivors, supported those people who had lost loved ones. We supported our military. We supported each other, because like I said, we were in a kind of collective grief, and we were all feeling it. And that brought a commonality to all of us, no matter what we identified as, no matter what color we were, sex we were, no matter what. Grief is grief, no matter what. And we were going through a collective grief about what outsiders could do. Terrorists could do to our country and our people. And it was the we, not the me, that we're seeing so much of now that's heart to me. Everything from, I call them the three P's, protest, politics, pandemic. It's been all about that for the last 3 years, 2 years, however long. Seems like forever now. Everybody's arguing about something. The masks, the vaccine, politics, president. This president. And I'm just saying, it's not an effective way to exact change, to collectively show our weakness to our enemies, opens the door for something we don't want to happen again. So we got to remember that on this 20th anniversary of 9/11. We have to remember who we were. Who we were individually and who we were as citizens of the United States. And try to aspire to getting back there, to seeing and embracing the similarities, hating the differences, spreading the love and acceptance, not the hate. As individuals, presidents come and go. We don't want our country to go. And there's a couple superpowers right now who would rather be the superpower than us. And we are doing this to us. We are making ourselves vulnerable. Again, by exposing our flank, we can't do it. We can't do it. Not only will the changes people are talking about not get enacted, but perhaps things like 9/11 or worse, I believe personally that COVID was a bio attack. And it's funny, I was talking to my husband about it, and he said, they wouldn't do that. They were killing their own, they were killing their own people. It had to be an accident. And neither of us ever bought into the wet market thing when you find out a couple blocks away is the biggest bioweapons laboratory in China, maybe in that whole end of the world. What a coincidence. I don't believe in those. I don't believe in those coincidences. So I never doubted it was the bioweapons lab. And I thought for a while it was an accident, and then I thought about it. I'm thinking like an American. Nothing wrong. Not a racist. Have Chinese friends, not the Chinese people. But the communist government of China, who owns that bioweapons lab and wants to be, has made no secret, they want to be the superpower, has bought up all kinds of land and businesses, and we owe them a lot of money, and there's not a product made in this country, a drug, a car, an appliance, whatever, that some part of it doesn't come from China. We've seen it in the auto market this year. Buy a new car? Not many to pick from. A lot of empty car lots. Why? One little tiny computer chip. One little computer chip. There was a bunch of huge containers, more than I thought any boat could hold, that sunk back in the spring. And all those computer chips went down. Unfortunately, you needed that computer chip for these new smart cars. And you also needed them for computers. Every drug, every vitamin that we take has an ingredient in it that we get from China. I don't even want to go with social media and Amazon. Too many people, old-fashioned greed, right? Old-fashioned greed will be our downfall. Our doing business, with our enemies. Now, the way they went after Taiwan, Hong Kong, when COVID did break out, you couldn't get within a zillion miles of Beijing. And people were ordered into their homes, where many promptly died of starvation. I guess they don't have grocery delivery like I do. And they weren't able to leave their house to go to the store. They had to stay in their house. So people died of COVID, or they died of starvation. And the Communist Chinese Party thinks nothing of a few million people dying of their citizens, think nothing of it. Hard for us to think in our American mind that a country would do such a thing. I personally believe they did. And when they see, have seen how we reacted, let's just say there have been a lot of examples of division that could be played upon because it leaves a door open. You know that old saying, there's a reason for old sayings, united we stand, divided we fall. Yeah. United we stand. And I hope this 20th anniversary of 9/11, we can remember how we stood as a nation on September 11th, 2001, and try to come back to that now. To have each other's back, to be able to agree to disagree, to try to make the world a better place together, not in someone's face and not under directives and indoctrination. One thing we are here, and I appreciate it, is free. And we had a rugged individualism that was a hallmark of the people who came to this country in the first place and founded it. They wanted something better. And you don't see anybody on planes that take off in the United States, in spite of all the bad-mouthing you hear about our country from some of its citizens. You don't see any planes leaving the U.S. with people hanging off the wings. People want to come here because they see something that many have forgotten. And that's that this ain't such a bad deal. Compare it. Compare it to all the places these people are coming from to get here. And understand this is still the greatest nation. We can make it so, or we can piss it away. And I hope for the children's sake, I don't happen to have any. And I'll be gone before things change too much more. But I hope for the future generations that they can know and understand the freedom and the individualism that I grew up with, where you got to hear both sides of each issue, both sides, without bias. And let the child make the assumption that the person or the child had a brain. And that's what learning and teaching were about, is letting them hear both sides and then assimilate that information and decide on their own truth based on a lot of factors, hearing both sides, the environment they grew up in, maybe their parents' thoughts. But there comes an age where kids start wanting autonomy. And some of the things that they've caught on film that some of the teachers have said, I just find inexcusable. you got to tell the kids both sides and let them decide so they don't grow up to be marshmallows. You got to be strong to go out in this world and survive. And we don't want to foster shame, apologies for who we are or what ancestors might have done. I watch a lot of history shows on TV, a lot of them. There isn't a country, I don't think, that didn't have slavery at some point in its existence. There's still countries that do. Ones in socialist and communist governments, their citizens are more or less slaves to the dictums of their leadership, and they don't want to change. We did. We had a civil war and spilled a lot of American blood, all colors, to try to make things better, to try to make up for what we found wasn't the way we wanted to operate this new country. And we've been working on it ever since. Did everybody arrive? On the same day? No, they didn't. This is the 8th. Let's see, 9, 10, 11. Saturday will be the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And I didn't expect to be here talking for the whole show. In fact, I had a tape. Because of what happened to Karen, my co-host Karen Robinson, and I hope you have her in your thoughts and prayers as she's in the hospital finding out what's wrong with her, the horrible chest pain, headache, nausea. We'll be praying that that's something that can be remedied quickly and efficiently and make her feel better. Anyway, I was going to play a tape since she couldn't be here, and suddenly her sudden health change and my sudden three strikes in the last 6 days really just has me preoccupied and shell-shocked myself. And so when I found out about Karen in the waiting room, knew I wasn't going to have my co-host this time, I was going to put in a tape. And the tape is very interesting. If you go back in the on-demand, or if you go to my website, inaflash.org, and you look around September 11th in 2019, you'll see a show called The Ongoing Costs of 9/11. And if you want to hear a really incredible story, go back to that one. I tell you to go to braininjuryradio.com, but there's a million shows to go through to get back to 2019. If you go to my web, inaflash.org, and you go to shows, very easy to flip back by the month and year and go to September 2019 and find the ongoing costs of 9/11 on first responders. That show was James T. Ryder, a retired New York City police officer, having retired after 20 years. On 9/11, he responded to Ground Zero and remained there for 4 years. His assignment changed on 9/11 from the Highway Patrol to the Office of Management and Planning, where he was tasked along with Detective Tom Neal and Lieutenant Andrew Costello to create and maintain the 9/11 DNA database. James suffers from numerous 9/11 related ailments. He was presented the White House on the White House Rose Garden to watch President Trump sign the extension of the James Zegogra Victims Compensation Extension. All responders are now covered for both medical and compensation until 2090 because of this last of four bills their foundation helped get passed. The ongoing costs of 9/11. We don't often think of that when we're remembering 9/11, that day, and what happened. We're not always aware that people are still dying from that day. And this was a really incredible show I was going to replay tonight. I was just going to come on and say I wanted to recognize in person the 20th anniversary of September 11th and thank all of the heroes out there who helped us get through and keep it together, keep our families together, our country together, ourselves together. And then I was going to explain about me being sick and Karen being sick. And while we really wanted to do this show, and it's very important to both of us, that we weren't going to be able to. And then I was going to play the tape. And then you ask me what time it is, and I tell you how the watch worked. And here we are 2 hours later at the end of the show. I'd like to thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll check back to the show. Again, very easy at inaflash.org. Go back to September 2019, real easy. You'll see first responders, the ongoing costs of 9/11, and amazing interview. And you know, the year before he was supposed to come, and he didn't show up. And I thought he had blown me off. Tonight with Karen in the hospital, it's an example. The reason why Mr. Ryder didn't show up in 2018, and I saw it written down in the program notes that he was supposed to be there, and I said the guest did not show up. So there's a note in the program notes that he didn't come. That's why I knew to go to the next year, because he actually got a hold of me. And due to his many illnesses from 9/11, he was unexpectedly in the hospital the night of our show slated for the September 11th Remembrance Show in 2018. He wasn't able to come. 18 years out from 9/11 because of illness he sustained from his heroic efforts on 9/11. So he got a hold of me and came for my next Remembrance Show, which I do every year. And it was a really great interview. So I hope you'll tune in and listen to it. And I hope to see you next week. Have a great guest next week. And then this is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. Last week was September 1st. My guest was only able to stay an hour. So we did an hour of kickoff for Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. And I had said that on the 22nd of September that we will do the whole 2 hours. Anybody out there who is a brain aneurysm survivor who would like to share parts of your story or have any comments about brain aneurysms, that's 2 weeks from now. I hope you'll call in that night, and I hope I'll be able to be there. On the 21st, I have a procedure, not as bad as the one week after that, but I'm sure I'll be fine 24 hours later to be doing that show, and I invite you to call in if you're a caregiver, survivor, medical professional, anyone who would like to speak to brain aneurysms. September is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, and being where Brain Injury Radio and this host, anyway, is a brain aneurysm survivor. I had a rupture and then went on to have a TBI. So I'm a qualifier in 2005, all the way around for this network, as is my co-host. So to see you next week with my guest and the following week, a call-in show for brain aneurysm survivors or their caregivers, or their loved ones. I'd really like to hear from you. So I'm going to play a song out for all those lost, and that we continue to lose from 9/11. And we'll have a moment of silence at the end of this song, and I will just say good night, God bless, and thank you for your support. It means the world to me. Good night, everybody.
now that heart will just be void. No matter how much I need you now, heaven needing you more, and the heaven was needing a hero, somebody
you.